This is the November 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Shane Holtorf. He's at Logic Ag Marketing. That's out of Alta, Iowa, logicag.com online. Chip Nellinger is here with Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Blue Reef Inc.com online. He's from Morton, Illinois, and Brian Stark joins us from the Andersons at AndersonsGrain.com. He's in Mansfield, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org, where today you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I think you should sign up for both. They're $80 for registration per person. The Farm Assets Conference is Friday, December the 12th at the Agri Center in Bloomington. The FarmDoc team, along with many others, will be there on hand for the day. It's a great lineup, a day-long event. You'll want to join us for that. And then the FarmDoc team and myself will hit the road. The following week, we'll be in DeKalb on Monday. And then we'll be in East Peoria. That'll happen on Tuesday and Wednesday in Mount Vernon, the 17th of December. All the details for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit Series or the Farm Assets Conference are on our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Both are productions of Illinois Extension, the Farm Assets Conference along with willag.org, and then, of course, the FarmDoc team. Now let's turn our attention to Commodity Week. Shane Holtorf, I'd like to get started with a list of items that we ought to discuss for today. What have you been thinking about?
Sure. As we talk about the soybean markets, I think all eyes are on China. The soybean trade deal that we have potentially put together, haven't heard a ton about. And what this market does in the meantime, as we look to corn, one of the questions, the big questions that I have is the USDA right with their last yield estimate? Are we a little bit too high?
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Good Lord. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, your thoughts for the day?
Yeah, I think those are two big items for sure. And, you know, on top of that, what should a producer do in this environment? It seems like it's almost a you know, binary type thing here. China will buy or they won't. It's going to have dramatic effects. They'll lower yield or they won't. It will have dramatic effects. What's a farmer to do in this type of environment?
And Brian Stark of the Andersons on your list.
I'll try and tie both Chip and Shane's comments in a bow tied into the cash basis market. It continues to firm as harvest wraps up. Looking for opportunities to take advantage of that, even when the producer may be friendly to futures with some of the supply adjustments we're going to see here tomorrow from the USDA, as well as the continued robust demand on the corn front.
So let's talk a little bit about the cash basis firming up. So the question is, so what? That happens pretty much every year, right? After harvest, that it begins to tighten up because we're not taking in grain. Is it different this year than usual? Is there something odd about the way it has been happening? Is it different from one side of the Midwest to the other, for instance?
I think in the East, it's been a little more apparent that some end users were never able to get as cheap as maybe the crop size potentially warranted. Now, is that because our yields are a little too high? I think we mentioned that we're going to see first adjustment here in a couple of months from the government tomorrow. But I also think that our demand on the corn front, specifically on the export side, has never really subsided from late summer until now. And I think that has a lot to do with basis, you know, feeling firmer or getting just start to see that normal base appreciation, you know, middle to end of October before we really even hit gut slot in the Western Corn Belt. So I think there's a lot of moving parts, and you're right, Todd, that we historically see basis appreciate once the bin door shut. But I think demand has been so strong, specifically on the corn side, that we're starting to see that maybe take hold a little earlier than normal. And I think a lot of times the producer tends to forget about his bin bushels that he put in the bin, and a lot of times waits to the seasonal movement that we normally see in January. But often, the best basis time to move grain can be that late November, December timeframe.
Now, you travel back and forth between Illinois and Indiana. You make your way to Logansport, which is north of Indianapolis. I had a friend who came from Columbus to Champaign on Thursday and was surprised by the number of acres of corn, like many, many acres of corn that he told me he saw. Are they running that much behind on your trip, which is slightly different than what he was running?
No, they're not. I find that interesting. I think the areas that we see that are lagging progress would be your northern Indiana areas closer to South Bend. And obviously, a lot of that progress has been slowed by the lake effect snow we saw here over the last week. Obviously, the temperatures are going to warm and those guys will be able to get back to it. But I think as you get closer to that southern Indiana, southern Ohio area where they were very late this spring, use I-70 as a dividing line. That area certainly is behind. Ohio still has some progress to go, but central Indiana as a whole is essentially done outside of those northern areas I spoke about. So I think that's a component of it. There's not a lot of farmer forward contracting that's been done with this crop. We know that. We've talked about it since through the growing season. There wasn't many rally opportunities to take advantage of. And so a lot of the end users have been living hand to mouth, and some of the basis levels that they are having to stretch and pay for today, maybe a little earlier than they anticipated because some of that movement maybe did disappointed or moved fast enough because of the export demand that they may not have gotten enough deferred coverage yet. So I think that's the point I'm trying to make to the producer that even though you put it just in the bin, if the board gets to a target cash price with some of these strengthening basis levels, we need to start taking some chips off the table.
More an indication that sales were not made than of a short crop or of extra demand, and is what you're telling me.
Yes, correct.
And Shane Holtorf, can you tell me, is there much left? And I don't think there will be in your area to harvest. And then what does basis look like outside of Alta, Iowa, and western part of the state?
Yeah, I think I could echo a lot of what Brian said there. Harvest is generally been wrapped up for a week here. A lot of the anhydrous has gone on. You're not seeing a lot of equipment out in the yards. We did get 4 inches of snow over the weekend. Not a great looking forecast for the following week, and so the corn that's left out there could be a struggle to bring it in over the course of the next couple weeks. Basis is really started to come around. We didn't really see a big drop off during the gut slot. Just as Brian had mentioned there, basis stayed relatively strong. There was maybe 4 or 5 days where we kind of widened out, but it snapped back really quickly. Now we're starting to see, you and I have talked, Todd. We have, seven ethanol plants, I believe, within a 60-minute drive, and we're starting to see a lot of flash sales, even some basis on the positive side of futures. Now this week on some of these flash sale opportunities, and yeah, we've been encouraging guys to take advantage of these. It's tough. I think maybe everyone's got a little bit of optimism, but it's tough not to reward this rally in futures as well as basis.
Chip Nellinger, you're there along the Illinois River, an export route. I suspect you keep a pretty good tab on what's happening. Has the export market for corn remained really strong? And this is one of those binary things, I suppose. It's either a yes or a no. It could be. It's kind of a maybe. But as you watch that, are they not able to get corn as well, or is basis level been fairly steady in the area?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting, multifaceted question, Todd. I think part of it is that the nearby here is just okay. I think some of that is that we're, by all measurements, if you look at a drought map, in a pretty moderate drought here in central Illinois along the Illinois River Valley, and the river's way down. And I think barge freight is an issue there in the nearby. I think it's maybe masked some normal improvement. Now, it's not horrible, but it's not as good as you would think. But you get out there into the December, January timeframe, and things look pretty good as far as basis goes. I would mirror what those guys both said. If I'm looking at it from a producer standpoint, and again, you asked about the export channels. It's gone. I saw both comments today. First, they were going to have a an export sales release in arrears, so to speak, that dragged out all the way till past the first of the year. Somebody with a little more common sense maybe got to them. And then the last I heard, they're going to dump it all out tomorrow. Now, I'm not sure, but for sure what they're going to do. But if all the export numbers do come out tomorrow at 11, along with the report, we're not going to have a lot of time to figure out, in the moment, just how the export channel has been in the 5 weeks that we've been closed in here. So, all intents and purposes, I think that the exports were very strong and it's going to be friendly longer term.
Okay, so because the report will come out after we are all talking on Thursday afternoon, report coming out on Friday morning, I do kind of want to stick with some of the fundamentals on the ground at this point. I would like to talk a little bit about China. We're waiting, waiting, waiting still, Shane, for China to be into the marketplace. They did apparently make some purchases in the month of October. Clearly, the trade probably has built some of those in at some point. How worried do you suppose we should be as it's related to the 12 million metric tons that the president of China and the president of the United States agreed to, being more of a diplomatic function than an actual trade agreement?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. If we look back to, I believe it was October 30th when some of these initial details came out, we kind of got a sniff 2 days before that maybe something was happening behind closed doors, more to come. And the market really, really liked that news. Then we get some headlines and some initial views of the 25 million metric tons for 26, 27, 28, the 12. For the rest of this year. And I believe we were down 18 cents that day. And so I'm not quite certain what the market wants to see. My guess is they want to see some action. To your point, we got a little bit of an action and we saw some follow through here. I've been surprised at the last 4 days here leading up to this report. To me, it kind of feels like the all eyes are on corn. We're probably going to leave beans alone for the most part. So it's been a little bit of a surprising move. And I would agree with you saying that it's probably more of a diplomatic move. I know that they're not ever super forthcoming with us, but from what we've heard, China is sitting on a glut of soybeans. And so to want to buy, another 12 million metric ton from us seems a little bit shocking in my opinion, but yeah, waiting, waiting, waiting is a really good way to put it.
I would like each of you to take up just locally or regionally in your areas what you think the crop look like and what farmers believe the yields to have been as compared to my earlier in the year and whether these yields in the local region were better than expected or better than average, I suppose is a better than expected would be hard given how much they thought they had in the to put in the bin when we were running through late July into early August. But let's start, Brian Stark, with you running from East Central Illinois through Logansport, Indiana, the places that you would be talking to producers. What were yields like?
Yeah, so I guess I would start uniformly on both the bean side, better than expected or above average. I think where the dichotomy comes in is on the corn front. I think if you look at what we did last year in East Central Illinois from a corn perspective, it was one of the biggest mini producers or our customers had in quite some time. What I didn't hear, while the yields were good, or maybe In line with earlier expectations, because of the late season dryness and maybe some disease coming in, the yields were good, but they were either equal to last year or slightly below last year in many spots. And so when you think about us potentially setting a national record, I find it interesting that you have a crop that's equal to last year in some areas that are really important to that national calculation, but not really above or beating, what would consider a record crop last year. Now, Indiana, West Central Indiana, I think most customers would say their yields were better than last year, but they also didn't have necessarily the same type of crop size the East Central Illinois area had last year as well. So in general, the corn yields I think are really good, but I don't know if they're going to support some of the state estimates we currently have from my vantage point today.
Chip Nellinger, what area would you like to talk about that you're familiar with most, if that's in the Peoria, Western Illinois area, or somewhere else?
Yeah, I think Todd, from call it Springfield, Illinois to Rockford, in that kind of northern third of the state of Illinois, I'm picking up from producers we talk to, 10% of those producers are 10 bushels or worse off of a year ago. 80%, 5 to 10 bushels below a year ago. 5% the same, maybe 5% a touch better than a year ago. That's how I would probably cut it up in the northern third of Illinois from producers I've talked to. Beans, I think generally 5 to 7 bushels off of a year ago for most producers. There were a few, however, that were as good or just a bushel or two better. That's how I'd cut it up in the northern third of Illinois, in my opinion.
Shane, this puts a lot of pressure on the West Central District, the highest reporting district for total production in Iowa, to have a really, really, really stellar crop, and for that to extend into Nebraska and the northwestern parts of Iowa and Minnesota as well. About what part of that region do you want to talk about, and what were the yields like?
Sure. Yeah. So we have, I'm going to say the northwest 16 counties of Iowa. We've got a pretty good customer base in, but really from I-35 west and I-80 north, stretching into southern Minnesota and a little bit of eastern Nebraska, South Dakota, and we can if you start up in southern Minnesota, those guys had a phenomenal crop this year, probably a record crop. And so very, very excited when those guys get on the phone. Beans were phenomenal. Corn was great. You drop two counties down to Iowa, it's a completely different story. And so beans, generally speaking, in the area that we work in, I would say were not disappointing, but they were not exciting either. And so the early beans, early harvested, there were some crazy numbers being thrown out for our neck of the woods, and then they leveled off really quick. And as we've started to see some production reports come in, I would say that we're going to see beans, very close to, APH, maybe a tick above. When we move over to the corn side, that's where it becomes a little bit more concerning in our perspective is. We've seen everything, and I even saw this on my own farm, from 175 to 260, and the majority of this had fungicide on it. We had southern rust, terrible, in our neck of the woods, and then the same thing with some late July, August into September dryness, and so the corn is extremely variable, but I would say generally disappointing. So the last 2 years we had, record crop upon record crop. And as you alluded to, Todd, we were going to need that record crop, or it was important for us to attain that national yield. And I truly think that we're going to be quite a ways off of that in our neck of the woods.
Be interesting to see how all that plays out and what the national yields came out like on Friday morning at 11 a.m. Those numbers will have been out by the time this program airs on radio stations. I do want to take up some of the other things that are fundamental to the marketplace. And I'll start, Brian Stark, because with you and the export production, because I want an idea of how busy the plants have been. We know what they'll use in the United States, relatively speaking, because it's 10% of the blend. Although E15 might change that. You can tell me how much that might be, if you know. And then the export market is really important. Again, that's a Canada thing. A lot of the time, it's the number one export area. Can you talk about some of those fundamentals related to ethanol and its usage, please?
Yeah, I think to your point, Todd, Canada is one of the biggest exporters of we export ethanol too, and obviously, depending on trade agreements and such, will have some impact. But you're absolutely right. I think the plant structure today, as an industry, E15 is very important. While I don't have the calculation in front of me what that means for corn demand, it certainly is supportive given we're up against the blend wall today and your export market is the one that is the relief valve. So I think there's a positive tone potentially for ethanol demand, but it's probably not going to be the needle mover like some of the other two components because it's such a dependent on export today. Obviously, some of the governmental policies moving forward will have influence on, you know, what some of these plants do, depending on your carbon credits and such. I won't get too deep in the weeds with that today, but I think ultimately E15 domestically is a big deal, and we want to continue to try and get that year round to support some growth. But really, it comes down to exports, and can we get enough agreement across the spectrum with Canada to continue that practice, as well as some of the other potential new outlets overseas in Asia. I think there's some untapped markets in certain countries that are putting on initiatives. I know we've talked about Japan being one of those, maybe possibly even India. But for ethanol demand on the corn, from a corn basis perspective, to grow today, the export channel is going to be one of the biggest supporters of that.
Yeah, Shane, those seven plants that you have, I don't know how much of that might go north across the border. It feels like that the further northwest you get, the more likely that would be, simply because the transport would be much, much closer. Do you hear much about the Canadians and fear that they may not or cannot take as much ethanol in this marketing year as they have in the past?
Sure, that's a good question, Todd. And ethanol's not, I'll admit, not a strong area of mine, but, you know, generally speaking, the ethanol from our neck of the woods does head north. Echoed a little bit of concerns, but again, it's not an area that I spend a lot of time in, to really be able to shine a lot of positive light on what I'm hearing out of there.
And then I'll have you, Chip Nellinger, if you are familiar with any part of the export market for ethanol. There is a plant there in Peoria that sets right on the Illinois River, and that's what it's meant to do. Not going, of course, to Canada, but to other places.
Yeah, Todd, again, I'm not directly involved in that either. I can tell you that the numbers, as far as the grind goes, have been pretty spot on to maybe a touch above. So I don't, from a USDA standpoint, I don't know that they have to do a lot of downward revisions anyway from the current projections. So beyond that, I think the current the tariff situation and the government being closed and some of the stuff that we've been going through here is maybe clouded, some of the ability to figure out exactly where this stuff is flowing. Is it flowing as much as it should? And that's still a big question, I think, to your point.
As we wrap up our time together, and farmers are definitely going to wait until after 11 o'clock tomorrow to make whatever decision that they plan to make as it's related to the sale of corn and soybeans. But Chip, you say this is binary at this point. What options do you think they have?
Well, I think number one, you have to reward it. You know, we talked about basis improving. In talking to some merchandisers, I really think that there's at least half the bean crop left in farmers' hands unpriced, and probably 60 to 65% of the corn crop that is left to price yet. So, on rallies, that's going to likely work into basis. So, you know, if you're staring locally at a really strong basis level, maybe think about locking that in. If we do continue to rally, especially in corn, that could eat away at that basis. So kind of maybe separate your futures, decision and your basis decision. I do think farmers need to, start firing some bullets at this market. Definitely take advantage of the bean rally. I'm not very confident of the long-term viability of this trade agreement, if there is such a thing, with China. And CONAB, for example, this week has come out and essentially projected close to a 7 billion bushel bean crop in Brazil. So if you take that into consideration, it just doesn't make a lot of sense why China would buy that many beans from us unless there's a weather problem down there. So definitely take advantage of this rally in beans and be very willing to take advantage of a further rally in corn. Likely the funds are kind of in exit mode of their short position in corn, and that should give us a little boost here, in the short run.
Brian Stark, your thoughts on whether producers should make a sale or not, corn or soybeans, and what their options might be?
Yeah, I think I agree with what Chip said. I think one thing we noticed this fall is the producer, if there was a commodity that had very wide basis, it was soybeans. With the lack of export demand without China in the picture until obviously the recent trade agreement. So I think a lot of those went into space. We talked about it prior to harvest on a prior radio show about utilizing some space for beans versus corn. And we actually surprisingly saw that come to fruition, at least on the Indiana side here this fall. And I think producers have seen a nice rally. I think, carrying soybeans, there's a lot more interest cost involved if you have operating loans. So I think if you need cash flow, that's probably the first commodity I would take advantage of. I think beans simply are a leader in today's format. Corn, I think, taking advantage of the recent surge probably is warranted until we know more about the total production. Barring a big yield drop, you're still probably looking at a carryout 1.8 to 2 billion bushels. So plenty of corn around. But I think to Chip's point, we need to take advantage of this upward swing since we haven't seen a good rally like this in a while.
And finally, Shane Holtorf, same question for you. What should producers do?
Yeah, Todd, it's hard to add anything there that the other two gentlemen haven't said that producers need to be going out and doing, take advantage of the rallies. You know, the only thing that I might add, don't forget about the 2026 crop while we're here. You know, get a start. We've seen those markets tick up. We've got opportunities to sell better than we did off the combine this fall as we look out there. And so, you know, start taking advantage of some of those rallies as well, because as Chip said earlier, this feels like it may be a little bit short-lived. It's hard to see that China would buy a ton of beans today. And so just reward both of these markets, old crop and our future crop.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Shane Holtorf of Logic Ag Marketing, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing, and Brian Stark of the Andersons. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.